the shir today, and I saw all the shirim given today, were sponsored in loving memory of Arnold Lerman, Zichrono Livracha, Avram Yaakov Ben Chaim. And the yurt site is the 28th of Adar Bet. By his children, Abi and Albi Hafhauser, and their children and grandchildren. Is that today's date? Yes. Okay, so his neshama should have an aliyah. And may his memory be one that his family and friends continue to cherish. So, this week is Parsha Tazria. So it's bad enough having Tazria and Metzora, at least, you know, most years, there's some kindness by whoever is in charge and they put them together to get rid of the two of them at once. And this year we have Tazria and Metzora separate. So let's begin at the beginning. V'deber Hashem Moshe lemor, derber b'nei Yisrael lemor, isha ki Tazria v'yoda zachar, v'tam'a shiv'at yamim kimei nidat dovta titma. When a woman becomes pregnant and gives birth, and at first it's going to speak about the laws of a woman who gives birth to a male child, and afterwards it'll come back and speak about giving birth to a female child, it tells us right away that the status which is created with the childbirth is a status of tum'ah. So, of course, the first thing that we need to try to figure out is what does the word tum'ah mean? So this is one of these words that when we translate them into English, that it will inevitably fail because it's a word which is a technical word and it could be used different ways and it could be used metaphorically, which means tum'ah and tahara are, again, on a basic level, you can call it ritual purity or ritual impurity. If you take away the word ritual, so then you're going to come up and conjure up all kinds of other possible connotations, but it's ritual purity or ritual impurity. The reason why I say it could be used both in a literal sense and a metaphoric sense, and you can argue with me on that, so we'll find in 2 weeks in the parsha in Acharei Mot, which is, we'll have to wait till after Yom Kippur, it's about Yom Kippur, we'll have to wait till after Pesach for Acharei Mot, although we do read it on Yom Kippur as well, don't we? Yeah, and the people who will be in Israel for Pesach will hear it, and then they'll hear it again the next week when they go back. So there it's going to tell us that the person who sinned will have their sins purified. Ki biyom hazeh yechaper alechem letaher etchem mikol chatotechem lefnei Hashem titaru. So the person will have atonement. This will be a day of atonement. Letaher etchem, in order to, so do I use the word purify? So again, what exactly is tuman? What exactly is tahara? Is it something which is created by some kind of a physical force? Or is it something which is created by something which is completely metaphysical? I mean, sin could be metaphysical. So that's what I'm saying, is that there are places that tuman and tahara are quite literal, which really will be most of the cases over here. Let me actually backtrack a little bit and discuss tum'ah in a little bit more of a technical sense. What we're going to find over the next couple of parshiyot is that there is, in the Mishkan at least, and later on there will be a parallel in the Beit HaMikdash, there are what's called three machanot. There are three separate places that have three different types of holiness, and therefore people in different statuses can enter into these places. There's a place which would be called Machane Kadosh. We'll just call that, for, again, a lack of a better term, the holy. Around the holy, and let's use the Mishkan as our example, so that's the center. Around that, surrounding that, will be the Machane Leviyah, right? Around that will be the Machane Yisrael. So later on, we're going to have the holy parts of the Beit HaMikdash, and then you're going to have the areas which are outside on the peripheral, and then you're going to have all of Yerushalayim, which will be analogous to what was Machane Yisrael in the Mishkan. Different types of tum'ah will require a person to be separate from different parts of the of what's called the holy. So let's assume that Bisman Hazeh, the Beit HaMikdash still has holiness, or the Makom Mikdash has holiness. When I say let's assume that, the reason why I can say let's assume that is that's not a universal perspective. So like other things, it's an argument, it's machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid believed that as soon as the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, all holiness of the Har HaBayit was lost. That's it. Anybody can walk there anytime for any reason. There's no holiness. Of course, if it lost all of its holiness, then the question would be reversed. Why do you want to go there? Because it has no holiness. Which means there's something, you know, interesting over there. It's only when the Rambam's going to insist that, no, the Makom Mikdash never lost its holiness. There's also something which is also counterintuitive. The Ravid would say that the rest of Israel held on to its holiness, but not the Makom Mikdash. The Rambam would say that the rest of Israel lost its holiness regarding certain laws, but not the Mikdash. And they have opposite understandings about, you know, what happened to the holiness with the destruction, with the Churban, and so on. But going back to the point of the Rambam, so if the place still today has Kedusha, so that would mean that certain people can't go up to the Har HaBayit today because of lack of Tahara. So in most people's minds, which is us, the worst type of Tum'ah would be what we would normally call Tum'at Met. Right? Death for us is the most extreme, and certainly compared to the other things that we're going to see today, and therefore that should be the worst kind of Tum'ah. Ironically, in terms of halacha, it's not true. Just not true. Which means a person who has come in contact with death cannot go to the Makom Kadosh, but they can be in the Makom Leviyah, and they can be in the Machaneh Yisrael. Which means they're not, it's just in the holy places of the Mikdash itself that they can't go. All of the other types of tumot, which we'll call bodily function tumot, if you have a better term for that, then let me know, which will be a good part of this parsha, all of those tumot are outside of both the Mikdash and the Machaneh Leviyah, that's the Machaneh Yisrael. The one exception to all of this will be the Mitzorah. The Mitzorah is outside of all three Machanot. And he, Boded Yoshev, he sits all by himself. So therefore, now you know the answer to the question, which is really the most severe type of Tumah, the answer is Mitzorah. And unless someone really understood the Halacha, you never would have said that. You would say, no, Tumat Meit is actually worse. In order to fix the various bodily function tumot, for a lot of them a mikvah or a mayan would be enough, and therefore there is a possibility then to go up to the Har HaBayit, but to the places of the Har HaBayit, which are not the Makom Kadosh, to go to the other place, which again says, hold it, if I can't go to the places which are really holy, so why am I going up over there? Simply because it's the Har HaBayit, so again you get stuck into this thing, but a mikvah would be enough to go to a lot of the places. I'll tell you another secret, this may not be a terrible secret, but another secret, and that is that Herod changed the Temple Mount. He elongated the Temple Mount. He just physically changed what the Temple Mount was. So therefore, the question then would be, I'm saying this is a theoretical, could you go up to the place that Herod changed? So the answer should be yes, because that's not the Temple Mount. He had no permission to really change it. It was not done in a halachic sense. So therefore, the place that Herod made, which is the Temple, so now I have a problem. I'm going to call what Herod did the Temple Mount. I'm going to call what's holy is the Har HaBayit. Although, you know, you realize, of course, that's a totally artificial distinction. But theoretically, a person who went to Mikvah can go to the places that Herod had made. So I'll go back to the same point. But that's not the Makom Kadosh. So why do you want to go there? Which is, I apologize for anybody who's going to listen to this and get upset with me. But that's really the game that takes place for the people who go up to Har HaBayit today. They go up to the Har HaBayit, to the places that Herod did and the places that aren't really Kadosh, because then you can go to Mikvah, you can go up there. What's the complication with this? The complication is going to be, do you know exactly where you're allowed to go? Do you really have a good sense of what each area is? But again, we're back into this place. Unless you have a paraduma hanging around, you can go to the place which is Kadosh. You can go to the places where the bodily functions prevent you from going up there by going to the mikvah and healing those kinds of problems. And this applies both to men and to women. So if you'll ask me, can you go up to the Har HaBayit? I would say, sure you could, but only to the places that have no holiness. Was that a clear enough answer? But all of this comes out of elements which are in this week's parsha. So that's what I wanted to stress. Now, as we read again, Daber b'nei Yisrael lemor, Ishaki tezriel v'yodaz zachar, v'tam'a shevat yamim, kimei nidat dovta titma. She's going to become tme'a, in a similar fashion to a woman who is a nida. So this is interesting for a bunch of reasons. One reason that it's interesting is the Torah has never told us anything about nida to this point. So it's really interesting to make a reference to something that we have no reference of as of right now. Second thing which is interesting is, to a great extent, this should be the opposite of a case of nida. A case of nida is a woman who did not get pregnant, a woman whose physiological situation is such that it is the lack of carrying a life, and over here, a life was just now delivered. Why should there really be a parallel over here? So I'm going to come back to that. We skip a couple of verses later down, and again, the whole process of the male versus the female and how many days and so on is written out over here. And then at the very, towards the end, Pasuk Vav, it says, Uvmalot Yimei Tahara, the reasons why this is called Yimei Tahara is that during this time, it's any blood that she has is not considered to be menstrual blood. It's all considered to be Dam Tahara, which is allowed blood. What that means is beyond us right now. Uvlot Yimei Tahara Lebenu Levat. Tavi Keves Ben Shnato La'ola. She's commanded to bring a burnt offering. Now, that can make sense. A burnt offering is something totally dedicated to God. So I can say in this situation, she brought a new child in. Maybe there's some kind of reference. I want my child dedicated to God. I want my child to be a good Jew. I want my child to be religious. I want my child to believe in God, follow God, to be dedicated to God. So the Korban Ola is one which I'm fine. You know, as long as Yitzchak's not the Ola and we have an animal as the Ola, so then I'm fine with that. Uven yona utor lechatat. And on the other hand, she's obligated to bring a ben yona or a tor as a sin offering. So the sin offering is the thing which is troubling, because why in the world should a woman who just gave birth bring a sin offering? So she brings it al petach ol moed el kohen. V'kriv lefnei Hashem, and it's not enough that she brings a sin offering. V'chiper aleha v'taharam imkor dameha. Zot Torah teyaled l'zachor nekeva. But not only is it enough that she had to bring a sin offering, well, perhaps predictably, after you bring the sin offering, it then speaks about kapara of atonement, which should nonetheless, again, confuse us or confound us. Why does this woman have to bring, why does this woman need atonement? Because, of course, the question would then be, what sin she has been guilty of? So Rashi tells us something, and we're gonna read Rashi, and we're going to hopefully come back to the Rashi, but let's read what he says. So source number two, V'kvivu, limdecha she'im ma'akva le'echol b'kodshim el achad mehem, ve'ezuhu zechatat. Shenemar v'chipe alea kohen v'tahira, mishu balachaper, bo ha'taharat tluya. So what is it that Rashi said? So again, I'm going to really simplify this, but Rashi says that what has changed by virtue of bringing this offering is that now she can eat kudshim, which means one of the things about being tmei'ah is that you can't eat various things which are considered kudshim. You can't korbanot, you can't, it's not that you can't approach the place, it's that anything which is kodesh you can't eat, so therefore you couldn't eat truma and you couldn't eat a korban and so on, and that's the shift that has taken place with the bringing of this offering. The Ibn Ezra writes, V'tam d'mei tahara shehudam tohar k'neged dan nida v'einu matameh. Which means this is what I said before, dam tohar is not something which is considered to be tameh, and I'll say this on two different levels. It's not considered to be tameh in terms of things of kodesh. Now you can ask me an obvious question, but she's already tameh, so what does it mean that this is dam tohar? That this dam, and also in terms of a relationship with her husband, this is not considered to be dam tameh. This is considered to be dam tohar. This is not blood, which is nida blood, that's what he's saying. This is blood which is, quote-unquote, allowed. Again, I'm not dealing with the practicality of this, but I'm dealing with the laws of Tumah and Tahara. He continues and he says in Pasuk Hei, and we're going to skip to the part which is underlined, B'chol kodesh lo tiga, kamo ha-ma'aser v'atumah u'basar shlamim, which is exactly what I was saying. That during this time of Tumash, not just that she can't enter a place which is Kadosh, she can't come in contact with any food which is Kodesh as well. Ve'el mikdash el-chatzer o'omoed. That means that this is a separation from holiness which is taking place during this time. O'la'zara b'beit ha-mikdash. V'dmei tahara Oel Dmei Torah Echad Hu. And then he continues and he says, when he talks about the offering which is brought, and there's two offerings, one was the Olah and one was the Chatat. And he writes, towards the end, right before it's underlined, V'yesh Omer Shetama Keves La'Olah, Shema Olta, the word Shema should trouble you all. Maybe. But when somebody says to me, maybe, I can also say, maybe not. Maybe, Shema Olta Shum Machshava Alurucha B'Shat Lidata Merov Hatzar. Chatat Shema Dibra B'Piha. So the Ibn Ezra's trying. We have to award him for trying, but even he has to know that there's a weakness to what he's saying. What did he just now do? Because it's clever what he did. He knows, as we should know, that the Korban Ola is connected to thought. The Gemara connects the Korban Ola generally to things that a person did in terms of inappropriate thoughts. So it says that maybe when this woman went through this whole process of labor, pregnancy and labor, maybe she had inappropriate thoughts, like, I will kill my husband. And it says, and the chatat is brought because maybe she said something inappropriate like, I will kill my husband. So the problem with this, and we'll see where this comes from in a moment, the problem with this is that his admission was maybe. So if it's maybe, it's also maybe not. So that how can you obligate somebody to bring a korban or two korbanot because of maybe? That again, there is such a korban for possible sins, but this isn't it. That the korban olav yored, this is not it. So just again, compare his maybe shema to what it says in the Gemara in source 4. Shalu tami David Reb Shimon ben Yochai nimam retori yoladit miviyar korban. So our classroom is not the first classroom that such a question was ever raised. We see that the students asked Rav Shimon Yochai this question. And Amar Lahem, and he says, B'sha'ah shekorat leled, in the moment that the woman is about to give birth, kofetzet v'nishbat shelo tizakek lebala. She gets up and she swears she's never going to let her husband touch her again. L'fichach am retorah to be korban, therefore she brings a korban. Now that's a wonderful answer, except the Ibn Ezra, trying to sell that answer, added that one word in which we like a lot. And what's that one word? Maybe, Shema. Which actually completely weakens the whole approach because maybe not. So how can you obligate this korban? So this is somewhat perplexing. Yes.
Is this still the Ola?
Both. Well, he's talking about both. Ibn Ezra's talking about both. The Gemara, I'm pretty sure, is really directed towards the korban chatat, towards the sin offering. Okay.
30%, 50%, so we don't know she can't do
it. Because it's not true.
Which part?
even statistically it's not true. Right? It's not
she
true.
Have more children. I don't know if that would be
51%? You're really going to say?
No, it doesn't have to be 51%.
So 20%, that's enough to require everyone to bring a korban? Why don't you just say that anybody who did this, make it a law, anybody who did this... But anybody who made a vow and broke the vow, either they have to be matir neder or they have to go and bring a korban for not keeping their vow. Why doesn't this just fit into? You already have vow laws on the books. You studied law. Yes. Why are we creating more laws that are just inappropriate? Convincing or no?
I'll have to think about it. I'm sure it's.
Okay. You notice he's a real lawyer. He couldn't even admit that he studied law. You studied law? Well, I don't know. They're trained not to give answers that we can hold against them. The Ramban, in source number 5, says something which I think is very important, and I think it's very important today. Tavi kofer nafsha shi'amod mikora v'shitit taher. Ki Hashem yit'ale rofei kol basar umafli la'asot. What did he say? It really is important. But what is it that he just now said? The Ramban in source number 5. The Ramban is telling us that there's a change in status that just took place, that she went through a process. The process is a complicated process. Childbirth is complicated today. It was infinitely more complicated in antiquity. People didn't always survive. And there needs to be a procedure, and it's interesting, a ritual, that will deal with the physical, the emotional, the spiritual change which is just now taking place. Yeah. No, Birkatical Mail is not on the books yet. And it's not on the books yet. And if anything, what you've raised is another question, why not bring a generic Korban Todah? That could be a question which we'll see will be dealt with in a moment. Rabbeinu Bachaye will speak about that, but Rabbeinu Bachaye is very often, I don't know how to say this, he's riffing off of the Ramban. You can quote me on that. And that's the book which is open in front of him. He's got the Chumash open, he's got the Ramban open in front of him, and then he's not a commentary on the Ramban, but if you read a difficult Ramban and you want some kind of clue what he's talking about, yes, there are commentaries. Rav Yitzchok from Akko, he's a student of the Ramban and wrote a commentary on the Ramban. There is also the Rekanati, who wrote a commentary on the Ramban. But Rabbeinu Bachaye, he wrote a commentary which is not a commentary on the Ramban, but it's always a commentary on the Ramban. So we'll see him in a moment, but I just want to come back to this Ramban for a moment. He's saying there's a change in status, and the change in status, again, she'amod mikora v'shitaher, that she now is going to become tahora from being tmei'ah. Of course, you can ask me, go back a second, why create the tuma'ah and why create the tahora? But he's saying that there's a change in status taking place, but then he points out the spiritual aspect, and therefore God, as the real, again, the Ramban is a doctor, is saying, okay, let's have some humility, because actually it's God who heals people. And as this woman has gone through childbirth, there now needs to be some kind of recognition of God in terms of this change of status which is taking place. I just want to pause for a moment. One second. I just want to pause for a moment and note the news that I hope that we all saw yesterday, that Zachariah Baumel, or Zach as I know him, that his body was recovered, which was something which I don't know how many of us ever dreamed would really ever take place. I mean, maybe we'll get to hear the story at some point about what happened, but this ability to have closure, this ability for his family to have a grave to go to, is something which is incredibly important. And again, it's bittersweet that there's going to be a funeral later on today. I mean, sad anytime there's a funeral, but a person who was killed 37 years ago. And by the way, I'll just tell you again, I knew him. I learned in yeshiva with him. I played basketball with him. I mean, I knew Zach Zachariah. I knew him well. And I don't know if you knew his parents before, you only knew them in Israel, once you only met them here. And his parents, especially his father, Zichrono Livracha, led a very, very dignified, you know, fight in order to that Zach should never be forgotten. But when I was reading this Ramban, it just sort of triggered that within me, is that there's a passage over here that needs closure, that needs some kind of an expression to it. And I believe the family did sit shiva years ago. They never sat shiva. They never accepted. Again, I'll share one more thing with you, then we'll come back to learning. I know other people who are in that battle. I mean, there are other people who were killed. I know people who were killed in that battle. I know someone who survived from that battle. He told me he saw that Zach was killed. And he said if he wasn't killed, he was severely, severely injured, and this guy somehow got out and survived. And he said, but he saw that, I mean, the tanks were hit. They just drove into a trap, and he saw his friends. And this other guy learned in the yeshiva also, and he said that he was absolutely convinced that he was killed in the battle itself. Again, the whole story hopefully come out. He admitted that it could be that he was very severely hurt, and maybe, he said he felt it very hard to believe that he survived. I'll put it like that. But the family never accepted it, but that's exactly the point. They wanted closure, and it's an incredible chesed that they were able to, it's chesed, and it's also, it speaks of the country and of the army, that they felt that this was something which is worthwhile to do. And again, all of us understand this was not a simple procedure in order to accomplish that, but this is the Ramban is saying, is that there needs to be some kind of religious expression to speak about the change in status which is taking place. And as I said, it's a bittersweet day, but to have that kind of closure today, I think is really, really quite important. The Rabbeinu Bachaye, he inserts number six, he starts and he says, V'chiper aleha, ein lashon kapara nofel ki im alchet. So as much as we've been dancing around the problem, he comes out and says this right away. We have a problem, and the problem is that a sin, well, there's two elements over here. He jumped to the second element. Let me go to the first one first. The first element is the problem of, you read ahead. Pretty good, no? One second, I'll tell you. We have to do this deliberately. I heard him laughing. I knew he read ahead. That was, certain people like to cheat. So first it spoke about a chatat. Okay, that's half my problem. Why does this woman need to bring a korban chatat? An ola I get, a todah I get. Why a chatat? And part of my problem with the chatat will be that I translate chatat in English as a sin offering. Now that itself is completely unfair, because the word sin is an English word, and just like tum'ah, and for me to say tum'ah or tahara, purity and impurity, are terrible translations. I think chet and sin is a worse translation. I mean, we know, for example, that we have three different types. I mean, there's all types of sins. Maybe some of you can even teach me about some of this. But there are many types of sins. And for example, we're in the Torah, we talked about chet, avon, and pesha. So a chet is normally something, not normally, a chet is something which we're told is something by accident. Avon is something done on purpose. Pesha is something which is done on purpose in a rebellious act. I mean, there's different types of sins. Chet is, I ate something, I didn't realize it wasn't kosher. Avon would be, I'm really hungry, I can't find a kosher restaurant, so I'm just going to eat this. But I did it on purpose. Pesha is, I'm not going to that kosher restaurant. I don't care if the food is better. I don't care if it's cheaper. I'm not paying the kosher tax. I'm going to the non-kosher food because I refuse to be a part of this. So that would be chet, avon, and pesha. So are you willing to all call chet a sin? Again, the word sin, which probably has very strong Christological connotations to it. There's sin and then there's, I don't know, then you need, okay, I'm not going to go there. But a chet isn't a sin. A chet is a missed opportunity. A chet is a mistake. Somebody broke Shabbat by accident. Would you really, again, that would be a classic case. They woke up Saturday morning, didn't realize it's Shabbat, and put on the light. Okay, so it could be that to bring a korban chatat afterwards. So you're going to tell me they sinned? Again, I just don't like that word in this context. I would say they made a mistake. The word is used in the Navi for shooting an arrow at a target. So if you miss the target, tiyatamatara, so you miss the target. Missing a target is very, very different than I sinned against the target. I mean, it's just not the right word. So that's the first part of our problem. But the second part of the problem, which is where Rabbeinu Bechaye, at least where I'm taking him, because it's on this verse, is not only do we talk about the sin that this woman has done, but we also speak about the kapara, or the atonement. So if there's atonement, there must be something which was wrong, which was done. So what did she do which was wrong over here in order to bring this child in? So he says something which is really remarkable. Now, you laugh. I actually wrote this in my book, Explorations, 20-something years ago, and I did not quote the Rabbeinu Bechaye for one very simple reason, and that is I missed it. I don't know. I'm sorry to say. I did not see every commentary and everything, but I wrote this on my own, and then I found that he wrote it, so I enjoyed this greatly as well. So I laughed even more than you did when I saw this. So let me continue reading, and he says something which is really quite remarkable, now that it's him saying it and not me, so I can say this is really, really good. I'm saying I wrote it in my book not knowing that he said it. So now I can say it's really good because Rabbeinu Bechaye said it. So he continues and he says, L'fichach korban zeh sheyoledet michudash, is that word? Michudash ke korban ha-nazir. It's something which is unique or different, like the korban nazir. Because the nazir is also interesting. When the nazir finishes the process successfully, as having been a nazir, he brings a korban chatat. And why? So those of you who know the Gemara, and therefore are cheating, the Gemara implies, why does he bring a korban? And we also get to this great explanation, because all of the wine that he didn't drink, right? We have a wine industry in this country. And this guy has not bought the bottles of wine. He's not drunk his part of wine. He's not done his service over here. And therefore, he has to bring the sin offering for the amount of pleasure in this world that he should have had that he didn't have, which is a wonderful thought. We'll see if the commentaries as we move on really like this or not. Continue. And it says, Kima chat'a bizman ha-leida she-tzitzruchenu ha-Torah korban. What did this woman do wrong? What sin, I'm sorry for using that word now, did she do that requires a korban? The imzer korban hu al shabah b'sakana v'nitzlam yamita. If it's one because she was in a life and death situation and she was saved, hayarui la shetavi toda. Then you bring, that's your berachat gomel comes from the toda, then let her bring literally a Thanksgiving offering. Why? Because I'm thankful that I was in a precarious situation, my life was saved, and therefore I bring a korban toda. V'lama tavi ola v'chatat. So it's essentially the complaint over here is that these are the wrong offerings. V'yitachen lefaresh, and one can possibly explain, she'ena korban hazem mitzad chet shel atzma rak mitzad ima, right? We always blame the mother. Now, how far back does that go? She'hi ayta im kol chai. That we're going all the way back to Eve. Yeah, I know, you know that we're always going to get back to the Garden of Eden, but we're happy when Rabbeinu Bachaya does it. Because if you think about it for a second, this is what actually led me there. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, why does she bring a sin offering? Because she's going to be in pain during childbirth and she's going to say, I'm never meet my husband again. So where does pain in childbirth come from? That goes back to the Garden of Eden after eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So that was the punishment that Eve has, is the pain of childbirth. So if she has a pain in childbirth, has to bring a sin offering. So maybe that was what my thought process is. Maybe the sin offering is actually going all the way back for that sin, because then at least you have a nice sin going on here, eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The reference over here along the way to Nazir, if you look at source number 7, we'll get a little technical. The Gemara in Zvachim says, Chatat Nazir v'chatat mitzara hanei olot ninhu. He says that the korban chatat of the Nazir and the mitzara are not, in English, sin offerings, they're burnt offerings. Which means he's... The Gemara is bothered by what we were bothered by. What did the Mitzorah do? What did the Nazir do? What is going on over here? Where are the sins? And by the way, again, the Gemaras can and will create a narrative. Oh, the Mitzorah, he must be... I had a very interesting discussion yesterday in class. I taught this university, and I complained about the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai saying, oh, this woman must have said something. So, and I compare it to the Mitzorah. So one of the students says, no, but the Mitzorah, they're guilty of Lashon Hara. I said, where do you say, well, that's the narrative that the Gemara creates. So it's very interesting. That narrative sounded good, but this narrative, Shimon Bar Yochai, doesn't sound as good. Which means the Gemara creates narratives to try to explain to us why there is a Korban Chatat. But let's back up a second. Why does Mitzorah bring a Korban Chatat? What sin did he do? He has a rash, right? What sin did he do? Again, that's the narrative the Gemara creates. I'm not rejecting it. I'm just saying that's why the Gemara creates it. We're going in a circle here. Why does the Gemara create the narrative? Because he brings a korban chatat. Why does the Nazir bring it? Oh, because he didn't drink wine. Why does the woman bring it? Oh, because she must have said this. Don't you realize that there's a theme going on over here? Where does this lead you? Once you realize this theme, where does this lead you? Now, the Gemara just now said something really interesting. What did the Gemara say? Oh, by the way, the Chatat of the Nazir and the Chatat of the Mitzorah, they're not really a Korban Chatat. They're both a Korban Ola. So that should have told you something. The Netziv in source number 8 goes along the same way. He quotes this Gemara and he says, it's 2 lines on the bottom. These are not Korbanot that bring about Kapara. By the way, that's not going to help us now. Because it could be by the Nazir and by the Mitzorah, there's no need for kapara, but we did see the word kapara over here, which means that the need for atonement was mentioned here. So that's where the break is going to be. And he writes that these are korban, these are olot, and then he gets a little more technical into the various korbanot which were brought by the Nazir. The Me'iri, and I'm so glad the Me'iri said this in source number 9, because if I would have said this, you may have gotten mad at me, even though I said it already, but you may not have heard it. where it's underlined, again, the Meir is a commentary on the Gemara, where it's lomash einu chayev b'chatot zo, ba'afal pisha chatat yoledet, af hi eina ba'al chet. So he admitted it. The Meir said, there's no sin in the sin offering, which of course is a problem. Why is she bringing a sin offering, and why is there a need for kapara? But he says, let's be honest, there's no sin over here. I'm going to say this again. Thank God we know what sin is. Yes? No one's going to say yes. What? We know what sin is, right? Yeah. Yes? We know what sin is. And that's not sin. So the Meiri just came out and said it, which is why we're very happy that he came out and said it. No, there's no sin over here. And then he writes, "Ve'enu netpas b'ned de've'al v'pikein over alav v'al ta'acher b'zum v'nei shechata machshira lecho b'kodsh." Okay, I'm going to skip a little bit, but if the problem over here was that she made a vow that she shouldn't have kept, there is a separate korban for that. This is not it. So, like, why are we even going there? But then he continues and he says that rather, what does this do? Shechata machshira lecho b'kodshim. Remember I told you we'll get back to Rashi? What's the change that took place? Now she can come in contact with things that are holy. Shechilatan mitzvah, midichtiv achlo otam asher kiper bahem. Aval nazir lo ne'asar bekodshim kol shelo nitma'a, v'dim she'ein makshor ele b'yayin v'ein kan mitzvah. So he is somewhat confused as to, so what's going on over here? And then by the very end, v'yafal pish nazir v'yoledet al ktsat chaytein ba'in, u'kamosho dershu b'nazir, me'asheh chata, Shem, that's the fact that the nazir could not drink wine, v'chein v'yoledet mitoch shechatzva v'nishbet, and also, again, the narratives that the Gemara creates by the nazir and the woman who gave birth, respectively, zesh'yoledet divrei agadahin. And he goes, those narratives, how do you want to translate? Divrei agadah. They're narratives, but he says, they're not pshat in the Torah. And the truth is that each one, if you read the Gemara carefully, which we're not doing now, but we'll trust the Meiri, he was a very nice Rishon, he says both of those approaches are really not pshat. Okay, we'll be nice, and we'll just go that far. He says they've been rejected. All of these are outliers, right? That's really what we're looking for. They're all outliers in terms of the world of korbanot and the world of chatat, and all of these are not a korban chatat, which is brought for sin. And as much as you're going to say, oh, that guy spoke lashon hara, and that guy didn't drink the wine, and this woman must have sworn against her husband, all of that's very nice, but what do the Meiri just now tell us? None of that is pshat, and none of that is enough. And it's nice to create a narrative at least that we can feel comfortable we understand all of this, but he still is not completely convinced that Tiferet Yisrael in source number 10 is going to be the one who's going to come back, and he actually, it's a back and forth conversation with his son, and I'll just say it quickly, and he says, even if it were, right, da'an alo amarti rak shechatat yuledet v'asham etzara b'ayin alachet ratzalom la'oraram shechatu avalo amarti shechaper lehem korbanot chatotan derebi yuledet b'nish ba'at be'emet einu mitchaperet shvotav korbanah. If she really did swear, this doesn't help the swearing. She has to bring a different korban for swearing. So with all due respect to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, even if you're right, Joel, going back to your points of statistics, even if you're right she's guilty, he's saying, yeah, that's nice, but that didn't help. If she really made a vow that was wrong, she has to bring a different korban for the vow. So therefore, the explanation ultimately doesn't work. Right? We have a fail in terms of the combination. Okay. So let's go back and let's try a little bit harder. And we're going to start all over again. And we're going to go backward, and hopefully we'll get out of all of this somehow. When we look at source number 11, and it speaks about the Tzarat, over here, we referenced this verse before, Pasuk Mem Vav, in source 11. Kol yimei asher hanega bo yitama tamehu badad yoshev michutz lemachane moshavo. He is forced to be separate and outside. This is outside of all the machanot. This is what I said from the beginning. This is actually considered halachically to be the most severe type of tumah. So I want to go back and try all over again in terms of definitions for the words of tumah and tahara. The state of tahara is a state that a person can be in contact with holiness, both in terms of place and in terms of object, in terms of going to the Mishkan, Beit HaMikdash, or eating Kodshim. So I'll say that again. Tahara is a state of being able to access Kedusha. Tahara equals Kedusha. And that'll be the reason. And Tum'ah equals distance from Kedusha. So we now all have a working definition of Tum'ah and Tahara. And therefore, it really is quite interesting when on the Yom Kippur service, we're going to use that verse, Ki b'yom hazeh yechaper aleichem letaher etchem mikol chatotechem lefnei Hashem titaru. That part of sin, what it does, is it separates us from God, and therefore part of tshuva, what it does, is brings us close to God. So I'm not sure if that is, as I stated in the very beginning, actually a metaphor, or maybe that is pshat, because tum'ah separates us from holiness. So perhaps I can be separated from holiness both in terms of I can't go to this place which is holy, I can't eat or touch this thing which is holy, or because of my sins, I can't feel a connection to that which is holy. And maybe, as I said, it's not a metaphor, it really is pshat in terms of what is tum'ah, and therefore what is the flip side of this tahara. So it's interesting that this person has to be separate from the kedusha, and that's really the issue. The person who has tzarat needs to be separate. Although, think of the irony for a second. What is kedusha? How do we translate kedusha? As separateness. So what is tum'ah? Separateness from separateness. So therefore, we're at a place that right now I think that if we're lucky, we'll maybe be able to make sense out of all of this and maybe even a good section of Sefer Vayikra. I hope we're not trying for too much. In source number 12, we've gone all the way back, and you know, we did this last week for a couple of seconds, and now we're going to go back and do it again. This is the verse immediately following the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. Moshe says something which we don't know what to do with. V'yomer Moshe al Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem le'mor b'krovai ekadesh v'al pnei kol ha'am ekaved v'yidom Aaron. Moshe says, this is the issue, and we're not sure what he's talking about. For those that are close to me, become holy with, we notice the word holy, kadesh, we notice the word ekaved. And then afterwards, v'yidiber Hashem Moshe, v'yidiber Hashem el Aaron le'mor, yayin v'sheicher al tesht, and we get to this prohibition against drinking wine. But there's a different word that I want to note. What's the problem with the drinking of wine? Pasuk Tet writes, Yain v'shechar al tesh atov v'necha itam v'vo'achem el oha moed, when you approach the place which is holy. The next Pasuk writes, Pasuk Yud, U'lahavdil bein hakodesh uvein hachol, Ubein hatamei, ubein hatahor. Do you notice that this is actually an introduction for the rest of the book of Vayikra? It just now said something, again, a whole bunch of words. First of all, it spoke about Havdalah. I know that for us, Havdalah is also Ben Kodesh Lechol, and Havdalah is from Shabbat to not Shabbat. But over here, it will have Havdil ben HaKodesh uben HaChol. Over here, the terms Kodesh Lechol are very, very literal, not in terms of time, Shabbat, and time which is not holy, but in terms of space, in terms of, we have something brand new at this point. We were just given something brand new on that day, and that's called the Mishkan. And now we have a place of holiness. And now we're going to learn that there needs to be a separation of people who can enter into the holiness and how they enter into the holiness and what they do in the holiness and what are the terms of engagement. And on the other hand, under what conditions you can't go in. So ulahavdil bein hakodesh ubein hachol ubein hatamei ubein hatahor. So just in case we never noticed it, that really the introduction of tumah and tahara, which is the flip side or an application really of ulahavdil bein hakodesh lachol ubein hatamei ubein hatahor. Because what is tamei? Tamei is a situation that you can't enter into which is holy. You can't come in contact with which is holy. What is tahor? Tahor is when you can have contact with the holiness. So over here, what Moshe had just now said, and again, that's maybe we never got that, when he says, "Bikrovai ekadesh v'opnei kol ha'am ekaved," that something just now happened, but we don't know exactly what it is. Following up this theme, we got to the second part of last week's parsha. What was the second part in source 13? What does that speak about? It speaks about this whole list of these animals that you can eat and that you can't eat, kosher, non-kosher animals. Although it's interesting that those terms that we use today, kosher and not kosher, are not the terms which are used over here. Rather, which terms are used? In Pasuk Mem Zayin, if we want, we'll start a Pasuk before, Zotarata Behara Va'of, Kol Nefesh Chaya, and so on. Pasuk Mem Zayin, Ula Havdil, Bein HaTamei U'Bein HaTahor, U'Bein HaChaya HaNechelet U'Bein HaChaya Shelo Te'achel. Which means this issue of Havdalah on the one hand and Tuman Tahor on the other hand, unless you're going to tell me I should not use two hands. It's the same thing. What is Havdalah over here in this context? Havdalah is understanding when one can enter into the holy versus when cannot enter into the holy. When a person is in a state of Tumah or a state of Tahara, and this was generated immediately after what happened with Nadav and Avihu. And then Moshe gives this enigmatic speech, and then we flow into what? We go into all the laws of Tamei and Tahara in terms of what you eat, and then Tamei and Tahara in terms of the Zavah, and the Nidah is mentioned, and in terms of the Mitzvah, and so on. There's going to be all these questions of Tumah and Tahara, which were all an extension of the same idea, which began when? They all began at that moment in terms of Nadav and Avihu, but we still don't necessarily understand what that connection is. In source 14, and I do want to note something. Source 14 actually, in the book, follows source 15, and we're reading them out of sequence deliberately. But we can't stop at 14. We'll have to go to 15 afterwards to see what it followed. Source 14, Vayoma Moshe el Aaron. Moshe says to Aaron, Hu eshe diber Hashem limor b'korvaya kadesh v'idom Aaron. Kevin shara Moshe et Aaron omeid v'tohe. So immediately after the deaths, Moshe sees Aaron, and Aaron is in shock. Amar oili shekachi avira biyadi uviyad banai. And Aaron says something which is very important. He says, this must be because of sin, and it must be my sin and my son's sins. Which means Aaron just now said something very interesting in terms of theology. I just suffered a terrible loss. I must have guilt and they must have guilt. It's very interesting because he doesn't just say, I must have guilt. He goes, I must have guilt and they must have guilt. Nichnas Moshe tzlo v'hayim afayso. And Moshe goes in and he placates him. Amar lo achi zem misinai nemar li. See, that's very interesting because if it's misinai, then it actually predates what? The cheta ego. I mean, that's exactly what Moshe is saying. This is not your sin, and therefore, by extension, it's not their sin. But hold it a second. How in the world can you have... So I'm going to show my hand already now. But they were just taken as offerings. They were swallowed up by the fire. They became burnt offerings. And Aaron may think that there was a chet over here, but I'm going to ask, how can you have an offering, even something that looks like a chatat, and there's no sin? So do you all realize what I just now did, or no? At least one person does. That's enough. That's all. It's good that you came today. That's all that I needed. Because we, see, and we did this last week also, we're so focused on which sin were they guilty of. Did they do this? Did they do this? Did they do this? We keep looking for sin. Why do we keep looking for sin? Because they were swallowed up, and they're swallowed up, so there must be a sin. But over here, Aaron is also, he's the first one who says this, so, you know, and he knows, because this is part of the problem whenever we try to figure out what we did wrong. So what do we always figure out? The thing that we feel guilty about is the thing that we did wrong. So Aaron says, okay, it must be because of my sin, that's going to be the chet ego, and it must be they did something wrong over here. And Moshe now comes and says something which is really interesting. Moshe says, no, I already knew about this misin, I never really shatir HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'kadesh et habayit hazeh, that he was somehow going to sanctify, and the word kedusha here is going to be quite important to us. Uvadam gadol ani mekadsho, and I'm going to do this with someone who's great. V'iti omer o bi o becha habayit hazeh mitkadesh. V'achshav nitzar shnei banecha gdolim mimenu mimcha kevin shmaron miyad shatak shneimar v'yidom aron. Now we read this, again, we read it in Rashi, which is similar, but we read this over here, it was a little richer, especially in terms of the sin or the lack of the sin. No, there's no sin over here. There was something which was a process in terms of Kedusha that needed to be expressed. Now I want to go back. I told you this follows source 15, so now we get to look at source 15. Rav Isi Bar Yehuda Omer. So this is Midrash Agadah. I originally saw Midrash, sorry, Isi Ben Bar Akiva. What did I say? I said Yehuda? Okay. There's another version of the text that says Yehuda. So I'm, no, there is. There is. So, okay. Which actually seemed more realistic. So I'm sorry that my head did that. I saw this initially in Rav Kasher's Torah Shlema in the back. He has a whole editions, and he brings this midrash. Rav Isi Bar Yehuda Omer Lo Meitu Nadav Aviu Ela Shelo Liton Pitchon Pe Leboi HaOlam Lomar Lo Sherta Shechina BaOhamoid. So let's stop for a second. What did he just now say? So as much as we like to think this is all about Nadav and Avihu, he just now said something really interesting. It's not about Nadav and Avihu. It's about something else. It's completely different. I want to go back, you know, as much as I said now we'll understand a great deal of Sefer Vayikra, now let's go back and understand a great deal of Sefer Shemot as well. In Perek Yutet, which was the Perek that dealt with Matan Torah, or the leading up to Matan Torah, God says, you're going to be the chosen nation. You're going to be a kingdom of priests. Right, God is choosing us, and God gives us the Torah, and we are special, and we are, and all of this is addition. This is an addition to the Brit of Avraham, which was a Brit to get the land of Israel, which means going back already to the burning bush. We've discussed this before. There are two things that happen there. One is God says to Moshe, oh, "You're going to take the people out. You're going to lead them. You're going to take them to the land of Israel." That was always the itinerary. And then he says, oh yeah, and by the way, we're going to have a little stop along the way. You know, you're going to come back and serve God on this mountain. That was never part of the itinerary. So this stopping at this mountain, Har Sinai, receiving the Torah, becoming a nation of priests. Again, that's a good question whether that was ever part of the issue before. But now we become special. Now we get the Torah. So now what happens when we sin with the golden calf? What is going to change? So what's going to change is that will the promise to go to the land of Israel change? That becomes arguable because that's a promise that was made. The thing which changes, perhaps, is that we no longer will have our status as a nation of priests. Or more importantly, what does God say to Moshe afterwards? At first he says, I'm going to wipe them out, I'll make a nation of you, where the vow was still, the contract still works, because I'll keep my word, but through you, not through all of them. Just like at some point, Yishmael is cut out and Esav is cut out and people can be cut out along the way. I'll keep my word through you. And that's what Moshe prays about, and there we get forgiveness. And then to continue, Moshe prays that the people remain, and God says, fine. No, I'll send a malach, I'll lead them into the land of Israel, I'm keeping my word. He goes, but I'm not going to be in their midst. And and that becomes the point which is shocking. What does it mean I'm not going to be in their midst? Which means the issue of whatever took place when we became a special nation, that becomes removed. And that's then what Moshe prays for afterwards. Which means if I follow this logic, the building of the Mishkan, especially the Rashi approach, but I don't even have to say exclusively, when God says, no, you build it, v'shachanti b'tocham, and I will be in your midst, is now repairing that which was broken by the sin of the golden calf. Now, what's interesting about, as I said, this is the paragraph before the following one, and the following one says it's already Misinai. So we need to work out, because that sounds very much like a Sinai issue, but now we realize there's another issue. And the other issue does absolutely go to the golden calf, and now let me try to explain what we've seen. When the Jewish people sin with the eagle, what do we all become? We become idolaters, which means we become like everybody else. And as much as standing at Sinai, Naaseh v'nishma, make us different, this reverted us back to being like everybody else. And at that point, there was no reason for God's presence to be with us. So the healing or the forgiveness from the golden calf is going to be when the Shekhinah comes down into the Mishkan. And now I want to read Rav Isi Bar Akiva or Yehuda again. Omer lo, Omar, he said, Lo meitu nadav aviyu elitin pitch ela shelo liton pitchon pe leboi olam lomar lo shirta Shekhinah ba'ohamoid. That if they build the Mishkan, and God's presence is not felt in the Ohel Moed, there's no sense that God is really there, then the nations of the world will say, and this now you'll realize this terrible echo throughout history, that God, replacement theology, that the Jews have been replaced. The Jews were chosen. They were chosen at Mount Sinai. They accepted the Torah, but they sinned, and they've since been replaced. And what's the proof they've been replaced? There's no Shechina in the Mishkan. They can build the house, nothing's going to happen. V'kevan shenichnesu navda v'aviyu lefnei Hashem ba'o moed, and when they went inside, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, im ani erach apai, im elu, if I will be reasonable and forgiving and look the other way, ye kol echad v'echad miYisrael oser kach, everyone's going to treat this place which is holy and separate and special with a lack of reverence. Mutav yamutu nadav aviyu v'lo yitma'it kvodi afilu sha'achat. It's preferable for them to die and not to have a feeling even for one moment that this place is not holy. Miyad omer malach v'nifgam. And then God said to an angel, gave him permission, and they were struck. So, and you'll have the chance to look at the Meshech Chachma on your own in 16, because he elaborates on this. But what he's telling us, and this is what I want to get back to in terms, because I already said it, in terms of the chait of this woman who gives birth, we now realize what, I think we realize, what is happening. The sin of, see that? I almost said it. The sin of Nadav and Avihu. Is there a sin? Is there a chait? Did they, what, okay, they did, they may have done something not following the precise rules, but what this midrash just now said is they did not die because of any of the lists that you've ever heard of all the terrible things they've done. They died because they went into this place which was holy, and it's not a punishment as much as is a consequence. There's a very big difference between punishment versus consequence. That's what this midrash just now said. That the consequence of going into this place which is so holy, which there was not done in the precise right way, it had to respond because maybe more than anything else, this is what gave the message that the Shekhinah is in the house. The Shekhinah is in the Mishkan. And that was what had to happen over here. Not to do this would have countered the Kavod HaShamayim and would have countered the kavod of Am Yisrael. And now you read the words of Moshe Rabbeinu again, which again, we never really knew what to do with his words, when he says, "Bikrovai ekadesh v'pnei kol ha'am ekaved," that it's necessary for this to happen. And then the Midrash says, I always knew that something like this could happen because we needed to teach the lesson that this is a place of holiness. I want to go back a moment. The Nazir, the Mitzora, the woman who gave the Oledet, they all bring a Korban Chatat. And there is a change in status that takes place. The Nazir would take me the most time to explain. So let me push that aside for the moment. The Yoledet, did she sin? No, there's no sin. And she didn't sin because it's not a sin offering. While she has the state of Tum'ah, she cannot enter into a place which is Kadosh. It's very possible that the quote-unquote sin offering, the Chatat, is in order to note the change in status, like we saw in the various commentaries, most likely the Ramban and others. It's to note the change in status and to note that there was a problem in her life for the last couple of weeks. What was it? That she could not approach holiness. The Chatat was not anything that she did, but it was the consequence. I could not approach Kodesh because of the childbirth which creates a Tumah like Nidah. So because I couldn't enter into the Kadosh for this extended period of time, I am now bringing an offering for not having been able to bring an offering. I'm bringing an offering because I could not approach the place that was Kadosh. The Mitzora is a very similar idea. The Mitzora is outside of all of the camps. I don't have to say there's any sin that took place, but the law of Mitzora is one of Tum'ah, and again, these are all these body function Tumot. He's outside of all of the camps, so now he brings a Korban Chatat because, not because he sinned, because of the consequence, because he was unable to be in proximity to holiness. Now that he can re-enter a place of holiness, so now the world has changed. And that's what this Korban Chatat is about. Again, we've just moved the focus a little bit. Nadav and Avihu die, not because they sinned, but because in order to illustrate that there is holiness over here. It all comes down, everything about Vayikra from here on in is going to be about issues of holiness, issues of separation, issues of being able to approach Kedusha, not what brings Kedusha, what rejects Kedusha, how do you create Tum'ah, especially when we move towards the end. This is what the book is about. And that is why the narrative of Nadav Nevi was so important in order to illustrate that this is the beginning of this Kedusha. If you're going to push me to explain the Nazir is actually the opposite situation. The Nazir is somebody who had an additional Kedusha, and now he's going to a lower level Kedusha. His Korban Chadat could be that he's now going back to a lower level Kedusha. So changes in terms of approaches to holiness is what generates this Korban Chatat, which is not a sin offering. Again, think about what I said before about the word chait itself in terms of the target. You missed the target. So you don't want to use the word sin. It was a missed opportunity. So how do I look at those, I don't know, 40, 80 days that the woman cannot go into them? Okay, there's a missed opportunity. That's the chait, not sin. Missed opportunity. I could not eat kudshim. I could not eat truma. I could not go into the Mishkan during this time, so it was a missed opportunity. I had a part of my life that I could not have kedusha, and therefore I bring the korban chatat because of the missed opportunity. Didn't that work a little bit better rather than calling it a sin offering? And I look at the mitzvah during this time that he's outside. He can't approach anything which is kadosh. Now he has to bring a korban chatat. Why? Because of his missed opportunity. That's what a korban chatat is. It's a missed opportunity. So in the very beginning, we're being told that this woman, during the dam tahor, during the time after childbirth, that there's an inability of approaching a place which is kadosh. Okay, so at the very end, the korban chatat is brought. Why? Because of the missed opportunity. And these are not sins, but they're consequences. And I'm saying if this midrash was so striking to me, because it says that Nadav and Avihu, as much as we've always been searching, so what is the sin? And in the end, we've made them guilty of every sin we can imagine, a couple we couldn't imagine, and now we're being told, well, it's not about them. It was not about them, it was never about them. It's about the Mishkan, it's about the Shechina, it's about Am Yisrael. It's about us knowing that there's such a thing as Kedusha, and there's a price to be paid having a world of Kedusha. And the price to be paid of having a world of Kedusha is that if somebody accidentally tramples on something which is kadosh, there are consequences. But not to have consequences, and that, I hope you realize the angst in this midrash, not to have consequences or something which would be far worse. Because not to have consequences then could be interpreted by the nations of the world that God is not with us, and there is no Shechina, and we were never forgiven, and we've been replaced, and we're no longer a chosen people. And God said, that price is too much. I'm not willing to pay that price. Nadav and Avihu are going to teach the world about holiness. They're going to teach about Kedusha. And the consequence is that they will be taken as burnt offerings. Now you can say either as an Ola or as a Chatat. They will be taken as an offering, even though there wasn't really any sin.